Welcome to Revealing Men, conversations that pull back the curtain, revealing the inner lives of men. I'm Randy Flood, psychotherapist and director of the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan. I'd like to welcome my friend Jim Padilla DeBorst here at the table with me to talk about political masculinities. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Randy. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So just a little bit about Jim. He's a father of many and a husband of one. Has made Latin America his home. As a member of Casa Adobe, an intentional Christian community, as a missionary with Resonant Global Mission, and through his leadership of the Community for Interdisciplinary Theological Studies, he thrives to pull together what never should have been set apart: Christian faith and political insight, Christian values and economics, Christian theology and everyday life. His studies include political science and Spanish at Calvin College, where he and I met, and master's in nonprofit management at Regis and political and economic development at the Harvard Kennedy School. So, and you're back here in the States and heading back to Costa Rica next week, right?
That's right. Yeah, I've been up here for almost 2 months.
A month? Mm-hmm. And how's it been?
It's quite a time to be in the United States.
Yeah.
Quite a time.
Quite a time to leave, maybe, too. Mm-hmm. Jim and I met at Calvin College and had some wild times together that we're probably not going to talk about today.
No, probably not.
I did my thing and he did his thing, and we don't get to spend a lot of time together because he lives kind of across the globe a little bit. So, but when we do, we always find our conversations rich. And so we're going to have a conversation today. We're not sure where it's going to meander, but I appreciate you coming in and talking about this with me. So say a little bit about, you know, where you've been, and kind of we'll kind of take it from there and provide a kind of a little backdrop.
Yeah, so I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and went to like preschool, kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, high school, and college all within the same 25 blocks. But then, one really particular culture, one view of what the normal family was, or all that. And now I've been 30 years in Latin America. And Latin America is really the fourth continent I've lived in, because I took some time in Africa and in Europe also.
Yeah. So. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, how would you kind of frame your understanding of masculinity in terms of just viewing it now from around the globe and looking at American masculinity and kind of what we're seeing today, and just your sense of where we've been, where we are, and maybe your vision of where we hope we could get to.
Yeah. Like I said, I grew up in this really small community, and I like to tell this joke, like, you go over to somebody's house and the trash can would be under the sink on the right-hand side. And if it wasn't under the sink on the right-hand side, that was basically wrong.
Right.
In my travels in the world, I've been disabused of that notion. And most of my travels and looking at things and looking at American culture didn't really start with examining masculinity, but the political side, certainly. And as some of the new research and talk about masculinities has come out, it's really been interesting to put those two together and see how they play out in good and probably more bad ways.
Right. So if we just talk about the kind of the intersectional analysis of what you see, kind of masculine representations in some of your different cultural experiences, and the diversity of masculine representation and how people define masculine, what have you seen and learned in your travels? And
I remember having a conversation early on about just like body type, you know, like the type of body that's attractive to the typical male, and coming from a generation and a set of people that sort of appreciated skinny white chicks, you know, then being in West Africa where anyone who was skinny is viewed as sort of sickly, and having these conversations with some of my friends and having them think that I was probably just making things up or exaggerating. And so just even how the male gaze operates on the, you know, female body is wildly different in different cultures. And then I was just such a through and through member of this one ethnic subculture that, you know, was sort of tough and stoic and the like. And then I'm with, I spent a semester in Spain, and the family, the guys, the cook, and you know, really everybody's hugging and kissing. And it's just a really radically different setup. And slowly that seeped into my psyche, I think, and let my imagination mm-hmm. open up as to the different possibilities of what right. a male could be.
Well, what we talk about in my work is the socialization process, because there's this differentiation of gender constructionists and gender essentialists, which you're probably familiar with. Well, they're gender essentialists are really about saying, you know, men are men because of the way that our biology and we're born and we have these differences and stuff. And I'm more of a constructionist because I believe in it's, I mean, if you travel the world and see different cultures, it's hard not to be a constructionist because mm-hmm. men are men, you know, in terms of the X, Y chromosomes around the world. But so I'm just wondering what you've noticed about just different socialization practices that give you that sense that, you know, that masculinity is often a construction of these ways in which we behave or think or relate to women or relate to other men or relate to the environment or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the classic one that really has broken down the most for me is the idea of the male as this rugged individual. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Marlboro man on his horse out there, you know, rounding the cattle up or whatever. Mm-hmm. And almost, you know, I would say all the cultures I'd lived in outside of the United States, the setup is much more communal, mm-hmm. much more a shared experience. And there's way less emphasis on individualism. Mm-hmm. And so that isn't necessarily male-female, but it has massive implications right. for both genders. And I think especially for males, the individualism thing is bigger. Like even in the most individualistic structure here in the U.S., women who have been traditionally socialized right. are more likely to be hanging out, having a cup of coffee, sharing their, you know, joys and pains. And the guys are maybe, I don't know, throwing horseshoes and drinking beer or something, but not sharing.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you see in other cultures that you were talking about Spain, and I studied in Spain as well, but we weren't together. You were with mm-hmm. a different group of mm-hmm. Calvin guys. So this idea of men being expressive, yeah. I mean, so American masculinity is, you know, rugged individualism, and there's a lot of, you know, prizing like this stoicism, like real men don't have emotions or mm-hmm. express emotions to other people, you know, whether that's affection or verbalizations. And just say a little bit about what you see around that too.
It's very normal in the Latino cultures that I've spent a lot in for males to be really, really emotional about women about romance, about, you know, crying in their beer and stuff that I couldn't ever imagine doing personally in the culture I grew up in and was originally socialized in.
Right.
And then, I mentioned Spain. My wife's from Argentina. There's a lot of influence of Italy and Mediterranean cultures there. And so the guys they kiss each other for greetings. Maybe not now during COVID, but, you know, they kiss both cheeks, you know, and big hug and like mm-hmm. will stand next to each other with arms around each other talking and just a lot more deeper questions too about right. how you're doing and how you're feeling and it takes a while to get used to that.
Right. Mm-hmm. I've also seen images, even pre-industrial Americans, men were more affectionate and more comfortable, and that kind of came, you know, kind of in that Industrial Revolution where, you know, we had to climb corporate ladders and all that stuff mm-hmm. where we had to be a little more distant and rugged. So one other aspect of, you know, again, masculinity that I see represented in American culture more is this is dominance and power and kind of this, you know, so there's rugged individualism, you know, so it can be some stoicism. And again, there's diversity in American culture. I'm not mm-hmm. trying to, you know, make this, you know, there's a spectrum that we experience, but I'm just looking at this more traditional approach. Is this dominance and control and power? And I'm wondering if you lived in other parts of the globe and do you see that, you know, manifested in our relationships with other cultures and kind of this masculine political culture?
Yeah, I think certainly the whole colonial and neocolonial history structure process is one where the powerful are creating hierarchies that aren't essential, that don't exist, they're not God-given. You know, there are all these different rankings, and I've done a lot of work in South Africa too, you know, where the races are split. And so it's just a really strong effort to impose a set of hierarchies that sort of dole out power, that dole out prestige, that dole out honor, mm-hmm. and really intentionally try to hold a set of people further down the line. And there's some architects of that, those kind of things that are really maybe not explicit isn't the word I'm looking mm-hmm. for. They're very intentional. Mm-hmm. They might be trying to hide their motives and actions, but they're very intentional about it. And there's a lot of people that are just, like I was back here in Grand Rapids, a fish in the water, couldn't see it, you know, that they think that that is normal. They think that is just typical. They think God created people poor and they want them to be poor and they should go to heaven. They don't see the oppressions and right. and structuring that's going on.
So the structuring not only of masculinity but of culture, and so that kind of brings us to that kind of the what is happening in our culture, you know, postmodern world and stuff, and there's trying to level the playing ground, and there's historically powerful structures, and men had power, and, you know, and there's different white men had power, and so there's race issues, and so the chaos of American culture, as you read and watch it from Costa Rica, and now you're here for the last month. I mean, what's your analysis of what we're going through in this incredible transition? Hopefully, we get to the other side.
Yeah, hopefully we get to the other side without a civil war. I've lived through three civil wars, so I don't recommend them. Some people seem to be intent on starting one, especially here in Michigan lately. Mm-hmm. But I think if we really, truly value human beings and we sort of base that valuing on something like our Constitution, where we say we're all created equal, mm-hmm. or our religion, where we might say we're all image bearers of God, or most religions tend to, you know, embrace all of humanity, then we need to get there, you know, because we're not there. And there's a lot of water under the bridge that has made that not true. And the same Constitution that says we're all created equal, that, you know, African Americans are counted as 3/5 of a person, and Native Americans are savages, you know, to be conquered and run out. And so once you get to the point where you can see that things are constructed, mm-hmm. once you can see, you know, if we think of a set of Legos, right. once we can see the different blocks and not just the house or the pirate's castle or whatever set of Legos we bought, mm-hmm. And we start to take them apart, that needs to be done with care. It's threatening to people, mm-hmm. you know, people can get scared, but we can take it apart and put it back together more in accord with our values. Right. And, you know, our Constitution, my religion, says people are equal, you know? Right. So let's put it together in a way that respects that.
Right.
It's not that hard to say it. It's really hard to do it.
Right. And I think that there's a lot of anxiety going on for men now. My personal opinion is they don't recognize that they're anxious. It's more of what Michael Kimmel talks about, a sociologist, is he talks about a grieved entitlement. So there's, as we begin to try to do this deconstruction, some people are feeling quite anxious and threatened by that because they feel that we're tearing apart the proper order or the proper hierarchy. And so, you know, as we sit here, you know, as white males, heterosexuals, you know, it's like there's this power structure that we can historically look back, and the oppression of gays, the oppression of, you know, people of color, and the oppression of women. And for us to sit here and talk about it, I don't know if you're anxious about it, but I feel enlivened by it. But talk about what you see, this anxiety in you know, American culture.
Yeah, both in American culture and overseas, I think people are scared. And I think an important step is to just recognize that. And, you know, most people are deeply afraid of change. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to be fairly honest that white males might lose some privileges. Yeah. You know, if there's 10 people in the application pool, the, you know, black and the Latino woman are going to get a look that they never even got before. Mm-hmm. Much, you know, I'm not saying favoritism, but they're going to get a look when they didn't even get a look before. But we need to be open and ready to take the benefits too of deconstructing masculinity that didn't let us spend time with our kids and grandkids, to slow down our career, to cry in our beer more with our buddies, or whatever it might be, because for every privilege we deconstruct, there's at least one or two opportunities to take. Right. And as a male who's been through a lot in life and tried to be stoic and finally learned that maybe that's not the answer to everything, I think there's a real opportunity, and we need to be ready to see that too. Yeah. And embrace it. And that's probably what you mean when you say you're enlivened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that vision for me, as I experienced in my own life, as you know, is the balance of being able to be a dad and be have male friends that I can hug, and that doesn't mean I want to have sex with them. You know, and just that freedom that comes from moving away from the stoicism, moving away from some of that rigid masculinity that I grew up with, has been freeing and enlivening. And the more that we can do that in society at large, I think there, although some people feel threatened by the power that they might be losing, there's so much benefits. Then, like how you said that it's kind of lonely at the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that, and to be able to live more in community, there's some inherent benefits. And I think you've had some experiences of, maybe you can say about intentional communities. You know, is a nice lesson in that.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, I live in an intentional community. A lot of people aren't familiar with that term. Some mm-hmm. people are familiar with like a kibbutz in Israel or the Jewish tradition. This is a Christian intentional community where we're trying to share a whole set of social, religious, economic practices. And in the end, it's beautiful. Like even just now during COVID, when the schools are closed, and we've got four families in the community, we've got a whole system of tutoring and teachers set up where I'm reading in the press about mothers especially tearing their hair out, trying to homeschool basically their kids. We quickly set up a system where, you know, one dad is Monday and one mother is Tuesday, and right. You know, and it's just easier load. You can get the reset. And I think when I think about my own parents and uncles and aunts, even though there wasn't COVID, they were never having those kind of resets from
right.
some of the things that can really wear you down over time. And we can, you know, going back to the more political side of this, you know, once you deconstruct and you see that it's a set of Legos you can choose to put in together in a way that tries to be fair to the vast majority of people. Mm-hmm. And you can come up with different models of society that are balanced and tilted in different ways, but right. with a intentional embrace of the positive values that society wants to build on, rather than the past power of whatever ethnic or racial or gender hierarchy
right.
that, you know, held the guns and the power for a while.
Right. And there's that's the beauty of the intersectional, studies is that it helps us see the power relationships of when you start looking at race and gender and religion and how it comes together. And the more that we can start, like you said, recognizing those pieces can be pulled apart. And sometimes it's painful to deconstruct because people like order, people like tradition. And there's a lot of greatness about tradition and order, and we're going to hang on to that. We need that as human beings. But there's ways we can create new orders,
mm-hmm.
right? New traditions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So where do you keep the trash in your house?
Very good question. Oh, of course I still favor right. under the sink to the right, but we now have, you know, glass recycling, paper.
Yeah.
And then we have up on top, we have like five different composts, you know. We raise chickens, we raise animals, so we're saving the eggshells in a certain way. We're saving the bottle tops. In Costa Rica, they're collecting them to make pathways in the national parks, you know. And
oh,
so
wow. Yeah.
Our trash collection is sort of more like a recycling center.
Repurposing center. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Any final thoughts for us, Jim, about kind of leaving America and kind of your maybe your wish for, I mean, you are still American, but your wish for us as, mm-hmm. as men, as a country, that you would want to just leave as a parting thought or a blessing? Or
sure. Yeah, I'm what I like to call a U.S. American because I live in the Americas, and we're all and this hemisphere we're all American, even the Canadians, but they might not want to admit it. And I think the most important part in the political thing is to realize if we can write a constitution where we say we're all equal, all the countries and ethnicities in this hemisphere ought to be equal too, and our foreign policies, our economic policies, the things we choose to value and make supreme culturally need to take into account the other, because everyone on these continents deserves a chance to build their own particular version of utopia and and value and structure and order things equally, positively, and embracing all, not just their own little tribe.
Right. Beautifully said. Thanks, Jim.
Well, thanks, Randy. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to another episode of Revealing Men. If you're looking for more information about counseling, coaching, and consultative services, please visit the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan online at menscenter.org. Also, feel free to contact us on our website if you have questions about this segment, ideas for a topic, or would like to be a guest on the Revealing Men podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating so others can find us. Be well and have a great day.